You're listening to KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein. The term science fiction doesn't always make sense because the fiction may not stay that way. Many examples exist of ideas and concepts that seem far-fetched, but wait long enough and they turn out to be true. Science fiction can also be a haven for helping us think about big ideas. That's part of what's behind the new anthology, Hieroglyph, Stories and Visions for a Better Future. Tonight at 7 at Crescent Ballroom in Phoenix, you can be part of the book launch. Here with me to talk about Hieroglyph is one of its editors, Ed Finn. He's also with ASU's Herberger Institute for Design and the Arts. Ed, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So how can science fiction and the big ideas of a real future come together, coexist, progress?
So what we've done with this anthology is challenged science fiction writers, scientists, and engineers to come up with really big, ambitious visions of the future that are still technically feasible. Big ideas that we could either do right now, if we just had the right story to tell, or that we could do within one professional lifetime. So a young scientist or engineer could read one of these stories and just go for it.
I'm really generalizing here, but it seems like so many science fiction stories are either utopia or dystopia. There's really not much in between, when our real lives really have more in between. How does that fit in this?
So it was actually the dystopian trend in a lot of popular culture that pushed us to make this happen. This all started a couple of years ago at an event where ASU President Michael Crow was talking to the science fiction writer Neal Stephenson, and Crow basically challenged Stephenson to say, you're one of these writers who's very popular, who's written a lot of cyberpunk, a lot of noir stories about people with, hackers with silver sunglasses and knives and swords and, great programming skills who solve problems from the outside, who are rebels. But at their best, those stories are pretty murky. You know, they're not really optimistic narratives. And so Crow challenged Stephenson to say, well, the engineers, the scientists, they read all this science fiction. Many scientists and engineers go into STEM fields because of the stories they read when they were young. Mm. Star Trek is still incredibly powerful in that way. But the stories we're telling now are really negative. Every new Hollywood blockbuster seems to be about the world ending, or even worse, staggering on in some post-apocalyptic state. So what would happen if we came up with optimistic stories and really tried to change the conversation?
Well, but why do you think we reached that stage? Because I think people look back, it's been many decades now, but the space program, people were so excited about that. That was a big idea that people got behind. What happened in the interim that people became, are we getting to be too cynical, too skeptical?
I think there are a lot of answers to that question. The space program was a really interesting one. It's the great example, the Apollo program, that grand challenge. We're going to send someone put a man on the moon in 10 years. But on the other hand, it was also a military contest. It was about who's going to control space. Is it going to be us or the Ruskies? It was this big global contest over two different systems of thought. And that was scary at times, but it was also a really clear story that everybody could understand and unite behind. And now the stories are not so clear. The world is confusing and murky. We've all become a lot more jaded about the future. And so I think there's a complex feedback loop between science fiction and the stories we tell in popular culture and the stuff we decide to go out and build and make. We just had an event a couple of weeks ago with NASA's chief scientist, and she said a great thing. You can't invent the future until somebody imagines it. You need to have the vocabulary to actually make these things possible.
Well, exactly. Imagination was the first word that came to mind for me. How do you make imagination into something real? And we start off as kids, and everything is possible, and then we grow more and more cynical usually as the years go by.
Yeah, sometimes I think we sort of beat it out of them in school. So I also run the Center for Science of the Imagination at ASU, and this is really our mandate. How do we rekindle that imagination? How do we get people thinking more creatively and ambitiously about the future? And we're experimenting on a lot of fronts with that, with different kinds of events. This book is not the end of a project for us. It's really a beginning and an invitation to people all over the world to join Hieroglyph, the conversation online. It's hieroglyph.asu.edu. We want to have new projects that turn out new stories, but also activities, other kinds of narratives, and practical projects, getting young people around the world to take action in their own lives and feel like they have the power to change their lives.
And finally, I'm someone who still reads a lot of books. I'm someone who likes the paper in my hand, too. But how did you decide this was a good project for getting people involved in these different stories and thinking big?
The good thing about science fiction is that it invites all sorts of people to the conversation. You could be a physicist, you could be a high school student, you could be an artist, you could be a poet. All of those people use imagination, and a good story invites everybody in because it doesn't require you to have all of the physics or be able to sketch out the blueprint for a building. It gives you the thumbnail, and actually the readers do all of the real heavy lifting in any good science fiction story. We imagine that world. We make it real. And if you get people to do that on the page, if you get them invested in making it real through in their own heads, that's the most important step to making it real in the actual world.